Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. This is Lee Cantor with Stone Payton, and this is going to be a fun one, Stone.
Hey, man, our second official week in our new digs over here at the Sandy Springs Innovation Center. I'm liking it. I'm kind of excited to get more of our signage up, but we're starting to get things dialed in. This is going to be a fantastic segment today. A little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to visit with the president of the Georgia Society of Professional Engineers, Mr. Roger Grabman. But first up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, please join me in welcoming back to the Business Radio X microphone, CEO with Printform LLC, Mr. Malou. How you doing, man?
Good, good. Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me here. It's a pleasure always to come back and talk about what's happening in the industry and 3D printing.
Well, Malou, before we get too far into things, why don't you update us about Printform?
Yeah, Printform started in 2017, and this was a combination of people who were part of QuickParts 3D Systems, which is the inventor of 3D printing. And from there on, we have grown at 200% every year, and we are a small team size of about 10 and growing pretty fast. And we basically provide services to manufacturing as a service to a lot of industries like automotive, aerospace, and consumer products, and we help them with their designs.
So now walk me through their, like, what's the pain point they're having where they're like, I got to call the Printform folks because that'll solve this?
Yeah, anybody who's into innovation, trying to make some new products, usually come with a 3D design, but they don't know whether it can be used in 3D printing because it has its own design for additive manufacturing rules. And that's where we come in and help them first with the design, and then we check with them whether this part is going to be a functional part or it's just a show and tell. And from there on, we, you know, pick the material, finish, and then we tell them what the lead time is.
So you can help them kind of make a prototype just for show if they just want to see this is what it's going to look like. Or you can actually make the piece and say, okay, I only need 10 of these. Just let's see if for a test.
Correct.
So they don't have to invest in.
Yeah, in molds and, you know, get into a longer process of manufacturing.
Right. And then, so is this relatively new technology to be able to do it at kind of that level?
It's been there for the last 10 years, but it's quickly evolving, particularly with the materials in metal and a lot of polymers. So
when you started, how many materials were you able to 3D print?
So we currently have about more than 35 to 40 different materials in polymers and about another 8 or 10 in metal.
And then is this something you're always testing to see if you can do more and more materials?
Yeah, I think we are not a company which does the testing, but companies like HP and 3D Systems and Stratasys, you know, these are the companies which come up with new materials, new printers, and we are basically helping the customer to pick the right material and process.
Are your clients all over the world? Or are they primarily in Georgia or the Southeast?
We are primarily focused in America right now, catering to a lot of companies within the U.S.,
And then how do you get the word out? How do they even find out that this service exists?
So one is, of course, we have a 80-20 rule and reference of mouth, you know, with customers, happy customers going back and referring us. Of course, we use the digital platform through AdWords, email campaigns, social media.
And then is this also a marketplace or is this kind of just a kind of production manufacturing?
So it's a combination of both because we do interact with the customer. Before, you know, they're ready to pull the plug for placing a purchase order or right to write a check. So we do help them with the design also, and then that's where we come in. It's marketplace / technical support.
Now, this isn't your first rodeo in terms of business. You're a serial entrepreneur. Is this your first foray into 3D printing?
Yes, this is my first in 3D printing, but I've been in serial entrepreneur for the last 20 years. Done different businesses from IT services to setting up a business school. And, you know, right now I'm into another venture in dental aligners. So we just launched it a month ago. So
are those the plastic?
Correct. Yeah, it's similar to Invisalign, what Invisalign is doing.
So you have your own version?
Yes. So we do have our own scanner. So we have come with an intraoral scanner. It's maybe 10% of what it costs for any bigger company product.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that's innovation we have done.
So that's a consumer product?
Correct.
You partner with orthodontists or dentists?
Yes. So we give end-to-end solution. So we help them with the treatment plan once they are able to use our scanner. Then we have a clinical management system which tells them how to, put up a plan around it. And the technicians can view it. And once they approve it, we are able to print it also.
And then was this something that you're building from scratch or you acquired a firm?
We're building from the scratch. It's a total new product from mechanical design to entire manufacturing.
And then so you have to have outreach to the orthodontists because they're a key component to this?
Correct. So we are doing clinical trials and test runs starting end of May or June. So we are in a R&D stage right now.
So are those type of products, they need a clinical trial?
Correct. So basically, some of them need FDA approvals, and then some of them will have to go through because it's intraoral going into the mouth. So the radiations, we'll have to check on that. Mm-hmm. And then since the treatment plan is already been planned, we'll have to, get patients use it and see whether our treatment plan, because there is an algorithm behind it. So whether the algorithm is working or not.
So at this stage, where are you at? You're doing the testing?
So we're done with the scanner right now.
So you have the machine that can make
scan.
It. And then now are you testing on humans yet?
No, not yet. So we're working on it.
So how long does that, because I know medical device has a shorter kind of timeline than other medical.
So basically what will happen is it depends on the how long the treatment plan is going to be on the patient. So mm-hmm. we'll pick the shorter ones, like maybe 3 months, which need lesser corrections. Mm-hmm. And then we'll move on to the longer ones. It can take up to 12 months. Mm-hmm. So it'll be a combination of 3 to 12 months.
So you do the medical, the testing on the 3 months just to get proof of concept and it's safe and all that stuff?
Correct.
And then you roll it out?
Yep.
So the timeline to get all of this done?
End of this year.
So you'll begin testing at the end of this year?
No, we'd be ready to go.
So you'll have finished your testing in that period of time?
Yeah.
And you'll get the approval?
Hoping we are starting basically this from, more of international markets, because, here it'll take some time for us to get the FDA approvals.
Okay.
So markets like India.
So you started internationally on this project is international first.
Correct.
And the print form is America first.
Yes. So.
Man, you're a busy guy.
Sort of.
How do you find the projects? Like what catches your eye?
So anything which, is, related to innovation, I get excited about. Because I feel that there are a lot of ideas, but people are not able to put a team around it, and that's my strength. So I bring in every expert into it. Like if you look at PrintForm, we've got the best sales guys of the industry itself. There's a top three guys selling $4 to $5 million worth of parts every year. And similarly in the Dentomatrix, I have some great orthodontists, and then design team is good. Manufacturing, there's a partner. And there's a full-time technology guy who's helping us to build the entire automation side of it. So my strength is to put people together.
Now, you've been around the world doing your work. What made you kind of land here in the Metro Atlanta area?
So it was more of, my wife used to work for Accenture. She got an option to move into Atlanta. And then, of course, I have my brother-in-law who lives here.
Were you happy about that when you found out?
Yes, it is exciting. I had an option to go to Chicago or Seattle. But Atlanta, I think, was a good choice altogether.
So now that you've been here for a little bit, how has the entrepreneurial ecosystem been for you?
Very good. I got lucky to get connected with few of the, Chamber of Atlanta and then TIE, which is a great platform to be part of.
Sure.
And that helped me a lot to get in and meet people, like-minded people. So I got an access to the business, successful people, industry, and that helped a lot.
And then from your kind of perspective, what does Atlanta need more of?
I think more entrepreneurs. That's what we are focusing right now. I've become part of TIE Atlanta. I'm a board member. And one of the key areas we are trying to work is to see early stage startups coming and with more success stories. And I think that's what more Atlanta needs so that the kids coming out from the schools and colleges can stay back within the city, because then now they have the option to work locally.
Yeah, and you need a kind of robust ecosystem Correct. That allows them to kind of fail and jump to another place Right. rather than have to move or relocate.
Sure. Completely agree.
And then, so how are, and I know TIE is a great organization, and they're the charter members, which I'm assuming mm-hmm. you are, has a unique model. Maybe you can share a little bit about that, because as I understand it, a charter member has to pay money to volunteer, which is not like other associations.
Yeah, I think it's just bring in the like-minded people who have the time. Like, we spend a lot of time every week, every month. We meet almost about 8 to 10 hours to see how we can help the startups. So we have a great program in the Eng Entrepreneurship Program, which runs for 16 weeks. And then now we have a Thai university program, which we run for the entrepreneurs. So we're getting some success stories coming out of it. And we are trying to redefine Thai 2.0 in terms of where we want to position ourselves, because now we have Thai Angels too, where we have done about 15 investments with worth of $2.5 million in the last 12 months.
The history of the Thai organization is fascinating. It started in Silicon Valley, mm-hmm. and then it's expanded globally.
Correct.
And it started primarily as for Indian Americans to network amongst themselves, but it's expanded much
Yes.
beyond that.
Yes. Now we have a lot of people, you know, it's a cross culture, which is good. It's helping us to bring in other groups together, because there are multiple groups, but Thai, I think, starts at a very early age, you know, mm-hmm. With the TYA program. So
that helps. And that could be as young as high school.
Yes.
And then there's a place for them to kind of pitch and work as a team to create something.
Correct.
So, in order to kind of go to a national or international competition.
Correct. We invite for applications. And then right now, thanks to Westminster, is helping us with their campus, you know, to run these classes for entrepreneurship. And we do have the co-chairs who help us with put a business plan around an idea. These are real problems and real ideas, where a bunch of like a group of 5 kids come together, and they could be from any school. It's not just from Westminster. And then they come up, do a great job in putting an inception to, you know, a business plan, and to actually take it to the market. So in 16 weeks, we do all this. And then we have a global competition. The winner of Atlanta goes into the global. Mm-hmm. So we have been champions for the last 2 times, you know, in the last 6 years.
And then tell everybody how much it costs for a kid to participate in this.
It's just $550. And that way it goes in for back to the right. TYA program.
I know. So it's like one of the best deals in town.
Yes.
Any aspiring young entrepreneurs should be taking advantage of this.
We are trying to get more satellite centers. That's been the challenge for us because of getting the schools or the weekends and right. support. So we've been talking. Once we get that, we'll have one more in Alpharetta.
And then each of the teams gets assigned a mentor that they Correct. Work very yes. closely with. So this is, you know, you're getting kind of a mini MBA in right. business by going through this in high school. It's an amazing program.
Yes, it's an amazing program. And what I get impressed is being a co-chair, the knowledge these kids have when you do a product questioning, right? It's amazing. Like, we take the phones or we have the handles and we go onto Amazon to see if the product actually exists or not.
Right.
And these kids would have done every possible, you know, search, the cost of it, how successful the product has been, why they're trying to create. So that's something exciting. And the confidence level at that age, you know, when even just to the high, the way they come in and present themselves, you know, well-dressed and simple things, ethics, you know, etiquettes of how you do a presentation, talk about a business plan, numbers, how you can scale it. That is amazing. That excites me a lot.
Yeah, that's to me, this is one of those best kept secrets in Atlanta.
Correct.
Yeah, because I think a few hundred kids participate, but this is something that thousands and thousands of kids should be taking advantage of.
Yes, that's where we are trying to see how we can continue this journey now. In fact, thanks to Sid Mukherjee, who is a successful entrepreneur from Atlanta, he brought in a grant of $25,000, and we are able to put in another $25,000 for this program so that the winners can go beyond just the concept stage. But, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, that's amazing work. And like you said, like the last couple of years, they've won globally.
Yeah. Yeah, and we continue to do that. So right. there's a lot of parent participation. We have been lucky that some of the entrepreneurs and successful startup people have been able to come and contribute every Sunday, 3 to 4 hours, trying to help them.
Right. Because it is a big commitment of time for right. the mentors as well as the kids. I mean, you want people committed to doing this.
Correct.
So now back to print form. At this stage, what do you need more of?
More of growing the business, trying to generate more employment locally. And that's where I've been trying to reach out to the Manufacturing Association to see how we can partner mm-hmm. and help the startups here also, and then look at what their needs are. And so that we can be a supplier for all the needs.
Is there a robust ecosystem for kind of these emerging manufacturers?
Yeah, yes, there is. Like the market is itself growing at 24 to 25% every year. And particularly if you look at the industries like space where they need to get the product in the least time, I think 3D printing is becoming big for particularly those industries. And then similarly for electric vehicles. You know, so I think it's a big opportunity for all the manufacturers to look at that as an option.
So now are manufacturers adding 3D printing to kind of their repertoire, or is this something they're at this stage they're outsourcing to other people?
If they're big like GE and all that are either acquiring large companies or setting up their own shops. But otherwise, it's more like there are about 15 to 20 service providers like us in the market who help the customer to mm-hmm. actually make the parts.
And then that's just a more efficient way of doing it, is to hiring you to just make the few things they need because they're not needing it as much as...
Yes, because maybe the way the entire model works is that if you buy a machine today, it's going to cost you, let's say a metal printer will cost you about $1 million. And by the time you start using it, there's a newer technology available in the market. So what happens is that maybe what you wanted it on that day is there, but it cannot be used for maybe 6 months from now. So right. it's better to go with somebody like us who are open to any platform, any printers. And as the technology evolves, we are there to help.
And you're there, you're kind of first, you're getting the latest technology pretty
Correct.
Quickly.
So we partner with like HP came up with their new material. We went, because they're local here in Alberta, we went, met them. And they said it's a great fit because they wanted somebody to go and market their
right
services.
And then so you can jump in there and then kind of use the stuff and then get business from all over the place, whereas that one manufacturer is only going to be using it for themselves.
Correct.
And so you're bullish on 3D printing that's in all materials?
Yes.
The sky's the limit now?
There's no limit. So
what's something that might surprise us in 5 years regarding 3D printing?
Maybe particularly in the medical field where there's a lot of research happening with the human organs and tissues. I think that's going to be the next big thing.
So you think we'll be able to 3D print?
Yes. They're already working at a pretty advanced stage. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be. And I think the other industry which will take the maximum benefit would be the space and aerospace and then the automotive. So I think these three industries, I see a big use of 3D printing.
So do you think like in the space station, they'll have 3D printing available?
Yeah, they're already started to work on it. NASA, I think, has partnered with a company which is putting up factories, micro factories, to make 90% of the parts using 3D printers.
And then when you're in space, is there a different way of doing everything because of no gravity and things like that?
I think they're still at a stage where, they're figuring out of not maybe taking bigger printers, but more of a desktop and trying out and seeing if they can actually make parts which are functional but not critical.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it'll evolve very fast.
And then any other projects? You have the dental project, the orthodontic product, you got the print form.
So, yeah, we are on the service side also. We are basically doing data management, data cleansing, data labeling for retail and healthcare using machine learning and AI. And helping out industries to solve a lot of market, like the way market is driven. Mm-hmm. So we are in those two areas too.
Good stuff. So if somebody wanted to connect with you about Printform, what's the website?
It's called www.printform.com.
And then any of the other, do you need more help in the orthodontic product?
Yeah, it's the website would be www.dentomatrix.com.
And then right now, it's not open to the public to buy.
Yeah, we're just testing it. Right. So, yeah.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story and best of luck.
Thanks
not
for
that
getting
you need
me
it. Seems like I got a lot of stuff figured out.
Thank you.
Hey, stay with us, will you? We're going to visit with one more guest this morning.
Sure. Thank you.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, please join me in welcoming to the broadcast President with Georgia Society of Professional Engineers, Mr. Roger Grabman. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
So what'd you learn in that last segment?
Well, I've had some experience with hearing presentations on 3D printing. You mentioned medical. I saw an example where they had printed a girl's heart model so that surgeons could plan the surgery.
Wow.
So they could practice?
Yeah.
Or they can visual. So they actually printed an actual one, not just an image of one?
No, actual one. So they could do a pre-operative on that to see how complicated they are.
That's cool.
World is changing. So, Roger, tell us what you're up to at the Georgia Society of Professional Engineers. There's a big, it's E-Week, right?
Or yes.
It's coming up? Is it here now?
This is E-Week. The effort of E-Week is to acquaint the public with professional engineering and the whole field of engineering, particularly among students.
At what age student?
Well, there are STEM programs that start at kindergarten,
mm-hmm.
and also all the way up into graduate school.
So is there a shortage of engineers? Do we need more?
Well, there's always room for more engineers, more creative engineers, precise engineering. Engineering training leads to many different fields, government, education, business, manufacturing, research, all different kinds of industries. It's a very strong profession to get into.
So why do you think that kids aren't choosing engineering as much as some of the other professions? Is it too hard? Is math too hard?
I think that may be one barrier. To address that, the Georgia Society of Professional Engineers is a sponsor of Math Counts. NSPE, National Society of Professional Engineers, is the parent organization for GSPE, is a founding sponsor of Math Counts, along with several corporations and other organizations. Math Counts' aim is to encourage math competency among middle school students. Math is a gateway skill for so many fields, business, engineering, sciences, medicine. Without a math competency, the students have a limited future.
So now, do you think this is something that we can teach anybody to be good at math, or is this something that you're born with these kind of innate talents that you're kind of good at math?
I think some people get intimidated by math early, which is a shame. I think it is teachable. It has to have the mindset that it's not intimidating. And as I said, it's teachable, I believe.
Now, we do a lot of work with some women technology groups, and in their kind of view of the world, there's a shortage of women in some of the STEM fields, and that women are kind of self-selecting out at a young age. What's your kind of take on that?
I think it's reversing. I've read recently that the majority of college students are actually women.
The college students or engineering students?
Well, that's college students wide. But when I look at the people on LinkedIn who are declared as engineering students, a very sizable fraction of them are women.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in school, I believe there was two women in my freshman class.
Right.
They changed majors before graduation.
Right, I know. So that was, and that was a minute or two ago, but now you're seeing the trend maybe kind of reversing a little bit.
Yes.
Is it because there's just so much like kind of job opportunity? Because I would imagine the unemployment rate of qualified engineers is pretty much zero.
There is some unemployment rate for all fields, but it's very low for engineers,
mm-hmm.
particularly for registered professional engineers.
Now, in the path of a person that's going on a career of an engineer, how do you suggest that they kind of choose their specialty? Or is it better to be a generalist than this?
Engineering is very much segmented into specialties. So typically, well, the major ones are mechanical engineering, electrical, chemical, civil engineering. You can get into other specialties, even within those specialties. For example, electrical as opposed to power electrics, engineering, transmission engineering, generation, microcircuits,
So how does someone kind of find their place?
What interests them, really?
So how did you find yours?
Oh, I've often commented, how many mothers would be surprised at what their children end up doing later in life? I don't think my mother would have been surprised that I'm an engineer. Maybe you're surprised at some of the things I've worked on. As a kid, I was doing things with the resources I had. Even as an 11-year-old, I made a burglar alarm for my bedroom door.
But just on your own?
Yes.
Just using your own creativity? Or was there a model of a burglar alarm?
No, it was on my own. My parents found out about it that night.
When they broke into your room?
No, when I got up in the middle of the night.
So you were always tinkering, wanting to know how things worked?
Yeah, I think so.
And so that's a clue for parents out there that their kid might consider being an engineer. They like to tinker.
Several years ago, I was at a junk auction, and somebody was selling a box of junk that included some broken alarm clocks. Mm-hmm. And I suggested to a woman who had an 11-year-old son, buy the box for your kid to take the clocks apart to see how they work. Oh, no, no, no. He'd make a mess. And I thought, you have limited your kid.
Right. That's a missed opportunity. So now walk me through eWeek and how that's going to play out. Is that in conjunction with the schools? Like who's involved in eWeek?
Well, eWeek is nationwide. So there's quite a few organizations that are presenting programs to students, particularly at the younger grades. I suspect there's quite a few engineers who are addressing their children's class about what they do for a living. If you take a look at anything that people touch somewhere along the line, there was engineers. For example, here on this table, there are water bottles. If you want to know the technical term, that's a injection stretch blow mold PET biaxial urinate bottle.
Mm-hmm.
I've worked on machines to design and build those. There's engineers involved in making those bottles. There's engineers involved in coming up with the electronics that we're using now. And most people are not aware that there's a backstory to everything. And engineers are involved. And this is a field in which people can be making a difference.
Now, for the young person that's considering being an engineer, is there any opportunity to get scholarships or any kind of money to help them on their career if they don't have the resources themselves?
Yes, the GSPE is a participant in the Georgia Engineering Foundation, which in 2018 administered $86,000 in scholarship money.
Is that locally here?
This was for Georgia students.
Okay, in the state of Georgia.
Yes. At the national level, NSPE has a number of scholarships listed on their webpage, so nspe.org. There are resources for college and graduate school funding.
So how do they become aware of them? They have to go to the website or?
That would be the best way, yes.
Mm-hmm. And then which of the websites is the more appropriate for the scholarships?
Well, I would say both are both equally.
That's gspe.org or nspe.org?
Or geainc.org. Mm-hmm.
And then you mentioned that Math Counts. Is that a program or competition? What is that?
It is a 30-plus-year-old nationwide program. The model is that coaches start working in the fall with the mathletes to prepare for regional competitions in February. Here in Georgia, there is 12 regional competitions on the schedule. Some have already happened. The winners from that will move on to the state competition. Then the winners of that move on to a national competition in May. The state competition will be at Emory on March 9th.
So this is something like an extracurricular after school. They get together and practice train with some mentor / teacher or sponsor. And then they're working on their skills so that they can perform at these different competitions.
Oh, exactly. And they're quite adept, these students. They're impressive.
Have you ever been a mentor or a sponsor of one of these?
I've not been a coach, no. Mm-hmm. I've participated in a number of the competitions, helping with grading papers and running around helping with setup, data entry, interacting with the students. The last one that I participated in was February 8th up in Peachtree Corners.
Oh, just a few weeks ago.
The day that it snowed.
So how many kids participated?
That competition was the biggest in the country, 270.
Wow, in one place?
In one place.
So they all get together, and then, so what's a competition look like?
Well, there's a number of paper and pencil exercises.
So that's kind of first they all are in a room as a team or individual?
Some are team exercises and some are individual exercises. The students themselves are organized in school teams, up to four on a team, and then schools can have additional people there. For the schools to participate, it's low cost. And also, if it's a Title I school, it's half price.
So they're doing everything they can to encourage kids to get more involved.
Yes.
And then this is one of those things, win or lose, they're getting the knowledge no matter what.
Oh, it's neat to get a trophy.
Right, but still.
But the real value is the journey.
Right.
What the materials cover is number theory, some algebra, simple geometry, simple trigonometry, simple statistics, probability. So these kids come away quite sharp. Then part of the competition is also a spectator sport. Questions are projected on the wall, and everybody gets a chance, and the select few are rushing to get the answer first. And so one year the question was, what is the last digit, the product of all the prime numbers between 1 and 100? The kid answered in 3 seconds.
Wow. Did you know the answer?
I could didn't. It took me longer than 3 seconds, but when I hear the answer, it's like, oh, of course.
So now for you in this stage of your career, what kind of drove you to be the president of the association?
I've been active in the Georgia Society of Professional Engineers for a number of years. There is a requirement that professional engineers have continuing education. In Georgia, it's 30 hours every 2 years. I'm registered in 3 states. One of the states has an additional requirement. One of those hours has to be in ethics. GSPE is a very good organization in which to gain some of these continuing education hours, what we call PDHs. Since I was active in that, and also I've been the person arranging for speakers for the Atlanta Metro chapter for a long time, I got tapped to run for the state president-elect, and then, of course, follow up. That becomes the state president.
So now a young person that's maybe just starting their engineering career, how important is it to join these associations and not just join as, you know, put your name on the list, but actually be active and take some leadership roles or some volunteer roles?
The role of networking in someone's career is understated. It's extremely important to make connections. Some of them are mentoring. You come to a meeting, you learn things. You learn things from people. You learn things from the presentation, viewpoints. One of the challenges for the GSPE meetings is finding a speaker who can address all the different disciplines, mm-hmm. not just the civil guys or not just the electrical guys, something that interests everybody, that they can use in their own profession valuably. I think another big thing is many engineering students, at least starting out, never hear about professional registration. It's a state license to provide engineering services to the public. You trust this building that we're in. You trust the ventilation system, the fire suppression system, the plumbing system, the foundation. All of these were designed by professional engineers, and they're required to apply what's known as a stamp or a seal to the plans. The professional engineering is a matter of law. All the 50 states have it. The law is designed to assure public safety.
So now, for the young people out there that are listening, give them your pitch about why they should consider engineering. Maybe something that would surprise them that isn't an obvious thing that in your career that you were like, you know, looking back, that really is important.
For those who like to solve problems, I would say engineering is a great field. Not all problems are math. There's lots of different fields of engineering that concentrate on different kinds of problems. But again, the common thing is engineers solve problems. They just don't do design. They just don't run things. They solve problems. For those who want to express things creatively, solve problems, help society, have an interest in making life in general better, engineering is a rewarding career.
And I would think that one element of that is if you are working on something, at the end, there is something, you know, like you can look and go, I helped build that building. I was part of that thing. And it's there to look at and remind you of the impact that you did make.
Some of them are tangible products. If you take the field for industrial engineering, some of them are less tangible. One of the famous starters of the field of industrial engineering was Frank Gilbert. You've heard of Cheaper by the Dozen? Mm-hmm. He was the model of that. You've heard of the scenes in the operating room where the doctor says, scalpel? Nurse says, scalpel, and places it in his hands. Mm-hmm. That was one of his innovations. The industrial engineering field organizes people and resources to accomplish tasks. It includes the field of ergonomics. So that's not tangible, but is it real?
Well, the impact is real, absolutely. So if somebody wanted to learn more about eWeek or any of these things, one more time, the websites of the organizations?
So for National Society of Professional Engineers, www.nspe.org. GSPE, www.gspe.org. The Georgia Engineering Foundation, which is the scholarship, at www.nspeinc.org.
And then are you looking for more schools and colleges to participate?
We're certainly looking for more schools to participate in math counts. Mm-hmm. The time for them to start doing that, of course, is in the fall. We're certainly interested in students pursuing professional registration in schools. In Georgia, there are several schools that provide engineering curriculums. Georgia Tech, of course, UGA, Kennesaw, Georgia Southern, Macon, and also Emory has a biomedical program. All these can lead to professional registration. That process involves getting the right curriculum, sitting for an all-day test, usually near the end of their senior year, gaining several years of experience, taking another all-day test.
And then, so do they normally take these tests before they graduate, or is it something they get a job and then they take these tests?
Well, the first one can be taken near the end of their senior year. The second one can only be taken after they've gained the years of experience.
And that's just part of their journey in this career.
Yes.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Well, thank you.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. Thank you to all our guests today. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.